Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2023 Home Education Conference held in Salt Lake City, Utah.
So grateful to be here, so excited. Thanks for coming. Thanks for coming up five flights of stairs to get here, everybody. If this is where you want to be, stay. If this is not where you intended to be, stay. It's going to be so much fun. Before we get started, I want to go through a couple of housekeeping things. First of all, I will send you these slides. So you don't need to be taking pictures. You don't need to be frantically taking notes. This is the official stress-free zone. So this is the only slide that you need to take a picture of. Write down my email address. You can email me from your phone. You can email me when you get home. I won't be able to send you them till tonight. We're going to be heading back to our ranch that's in the boonies. But Carly at carlythornock.com, I will send you everything. My intention that I would like to invite you to join me in is that this is an hour where we are present, where we're feeling our bodies, where we're checking in with our intuition, where we're tuned into our highest self, where we're listening for God. And sometimes, when we're worried about getting all the information down, we can't feel in those ways. So I want to let you know, all this is yours. I wrote a ton of slides with all the info. It's all yours. Email me. They'll be yours by tonight, first thing in the morning at the latest. So what's stress, everyone? Who has some ideas? Cheats are on the board. Very good. Yes, that was right on target. Actually, right in alignment with what I was going to say. A state of worry. Stress can be physical. It can be mental. It can be any experience where we feel like there's a force acting upon us that's uncomfortable. Stress can be great for us, right? We lift weights. It grows our muscles. If anybody needs a chair, just point the people that might be outside. Be like, come on in, right across the front. A constraining force it can feel in our lives. If we have too much stress going on, then we experience adverse effects, right? How many of us know that we shouldn't be stressed and we should be stressed and we should not be busy? We've heard it all, right? Shake your heads if you've heard this before. Okay, awesome. But stress can also be a good thing. And today, this is all about a reframe. And it's going to be a pretty dramatic reframe and a really fun journey. So have you guys ever been stressed at home? Give an aye aye, Captain, if you have ever been stressed at home. Yes. So what are some of the things that we typically classify as stressors at home? Kids. Mess. What? Oh, darn it. I'm just looking into my front seat middle people. What was it? Meal prep. Laundry. What else?
Money.
Chauffeuring. Yes. So many of the, what was it? Yes, teaching the kids how to be a human, right? Like how to do all the things. Sometimes this shows up as stress at our house. Have you ever not been stressed at home in those same situations, in those same conditions? Right? Have you ever had dishes in the sink and it stresses you out and you're mad and you blow up at the kid and say the thing to the spouse, but then another day there's the same amount of dishes in the sink and it's your best day ever? And it's your birthday, and you decided not to do dishes, and so you're like, oh, the dishes, it's my birthday. That's what I do on my birthday. I don't do any dishes on my birthday. So I don't do many dishes either any of the time. But there is there is a difference between the environment, the dishes, the math of having seven dishes in a basin that is built into our countertop, and how much stress we feel. So what gives? What's the difference? What in the world is happening here, and how do we manage this little stress response that's triggering and telling us in our brains it's because the dishes, it's because the kids are crazy, it's because our spouse is contentious and annoying and leaves his socks everywhere, or because there's no money. What is it? Because we've all been poor and happy. We've all been around an angry person and it hasn't bugged us, and we've all had dishes in the sink and been fine. So what's going on here? And really, why should I be the one telling you? Because who's this girl, right? Who am I? My name's Carly. I wrote the research on how our houses, the physical things in our homes, the decor we choose, the way we spatially lay out. Come right here. There's a couple. The way our houses interact with our families to thrive and also to experience adverse effects, right? How the house impacts our family life. That's where I love to be. Sometimes I've studied work and relationships in the home and how we can co-facilitate things out of the home, but oh, my heart is in interior design. I came to college and I thought, oh, this is going to be great. I'm going to be an interior designer, and then I'm going to be an architect, and I'm going to be Frank Lloyd Wright, but nicer. And I got a full ride scholarship to BYU, and I was like, they don't have an interior design program. They got rid of it 2 years before I got there. And I thought that was very rude, and I made my opinions known, and they still did not bring back the interior design program for me. So I decided to major in home and family living, which is funny because that's what I love, right? Home and family. It's perfect. How did I not see it before? And I had a professor who said something like, the pictures we hang in our homes can help our families feel closer to Jesus. And I was like, what? This is about more than like pattern combinations? And so I asked her after class, what's the link? What do we know? What do we know about houses? Tell me everything. And she said, we know nothing. I don't know anything more than that. And that just seemed like a good idea. So I said it. So I got my master's degree in marriage, family, and human development because I wanted to figure out what was going on. I wanted to do my own research. I wanted to see how we've studied prisons and how you can reform your character and how you can set up a prison to help that end. We've studied schools in public school, how it can help people learn depending on what's in the environment around them. We've studied hospitals and how hospitals can help people heal depending on how we approach the hospital situation and the colors of the room. The key is mint green in the hospitals, and now it kind of feels pukey. Whenever you go into a mint green room, you're like, it feels like a hospital. The psychology has kind of reversed itself. Anyway, but nobody had studied the home and how the home can help the family thrive. Individuals, together, collectively, the people we bring into our houses, our relationships to God, there is nothing. So I went on a deep dive search, and I found that there are a few pockets of people studying this, but not many, and it's a really fun place to be. This is research that you all know in your hearts. This is social science in general, where we like to study the obvious things that everybody's like, thank you for all of our taxpayer dollars at work to tell us that homes are important. But I love it because it gives us language to talk about it, and it gives us a vocabulary to explore. A little bit else about me. So BYU, go Cougs. My husband and I danced on the ballroom dance team internationally while we were there. I married a return missionary freshman right as I was graduating, and so I had 4 more years to figure out what to do with. So I got, that's probably why I got my master's degree. It's all meant to be. And we traveled to Thailand and Vietnam and did a USA tour together. It was really fun. I love houses, and I've created a program and a whole community about all the things I'm going to be teaching you today. It's so much fun. And the other reason why it's really important that you listen to me is because I was an extra in High School Musical. And so me and Zac Efron dated for a few years, and it just didn't work out. But it's fine. And so that's a lot of credibility, right? Actually, my husband is Chase. He's here. He's way cuter and way taller than Zac Efron. It all comes out in the wash. But these are my 3 little boys that we homeschool. We live in an RV. We travel around the world, you know, like the landlocked world, the United States. 2 to 4 months every year, and in the rest we build our off-grid ranch out an hour past Delta on dirt roads, so 2.5 hours from here. It's really fun. And as I was getting my dress on today at my mom's house, I was like, oh, there's all the muck and the dirt from getting in my truck to go to church so many times. So we're bringing some of the ranch dirt here to you today, and it's a busy, busy, active life. I don't have children that respect my furniture. I don't have children that pick up after themselves. Yet, we're on the 18-year plan, but we have a lot of fun, and the things that I'm going to teach you today are going to unlock the key to your relaxation and your peace and your stress-free existence, even when you have a house full of kids and you love beauty. So this sometimes stress, here is what's going on. Here is what's happening. Stress is separate from the events in the house. It's separate from the clutter. It's separate from the chores. It's separate from the styled bookshelves. The stress that we feel is happening in between your ears. This is where the stress is actually happening. It's the story that we're telling ourselves about the stress. That's why some days the dishes bug you and some days the dishes don't. The days when I'm bugged by the dishes, I'm also bugged that I didn't get enough sleep. It might be that certain time of a month. My friend might have been going through a crisis that I'm thinking about. I might be developing a training on the inside, and I'm on a thought wave, and then somebody needs my help, and there's dishes. And that's why I'm frustrated. It's what's going on in between my ears and what's happening in my heart that determines how I interact with my house. And it's a nice idea, but I'm going to show you the research about it too. So the myth is that messes are stressful. How many of you have ever believed this myth? Me? Where we walk, have you guys ever heard stuff like cleanliness is next to godliness? And we like almost create a righteousness around the little spheres of food that are left on any horizontal surface in our homes. If we're getting serious about it, we're talking about our relationship to God or goodness as a woman being conditional upon how many objects populate the horizontal surfaces of our home. Messes are not stressful. We can be stressed. Stress is an emotion created by what we're thinking about. And I used to think this too, but what if messes could be connecting? What if messes could even be joyful? What if? Have you ever asked yourself that question? Usually by the time we see the mess, we've already lit up that amygdala. We're already in fight or flight and we're like, all the things are wrong. Why is the milk on the floor again? Milk goes in our cups, which go in our mouth, but then the cup goes in the sink. Don't we all know this? But when the milk is not where it should be, based on how the story we tell ourselves, we can get into a fight or flight loop. And just like we've been learning in this conference from all these amazing speakers, there are things that we can do to get out of our fight and flight loop. And then the messes, instead of triggering us into unsafety and a sympathetic response that's uncontrollable, we can use those same events to anchor ourselves into connection. So I'll tell you a story. Once upon a time, well, here's what David O. McKay, let's start with the prophet. Okay, the home is the best place in the world to teach the child self-restraint, to give him happiness and self-control and respect for the rights of others. Isn't that nice? Like sometimes we read these quotes and we're like, okay, so I have to teach my kid how to be self-controlling while he's smacking his brother over there. And I have to teach my child self-restraint so he doesn't break all my stuff. And I have to teach the child how to respect the rights of others and share his super awesome toy that he just got. And how am I supposed to insert myself into all of this and be the answer? We think we have to be the answer. We don't. We already have an answer. His name's Jesus. You don't have to be him. You already have a savior, and so does everybody else. Our job is to teach and facilitate, to let them learn self-restraint by failing at it. We get to teach them how to have happiness and self-control by finding misery and not controlling themselves. We get to teach them respect for the rights of others when they disrespect the rights of others and have consequences of relationship hards and financial implications often, right? We get to teach them. We get to facilitate this. And all of these lessons happen with props. If you aren't respecting the rights of others, you can do that internally, but no one has a problem if I was just like, I disrespect you, but I'm not going to talk to you, right? Like the disrespect happens when I start interacting and start doing things, breaking your things or saying mean words. That's where respect hits the fan. So we need to have a fan. We need to have things that can be disrespected because we need to be teaching our kids this. And the way that you learn is by failing. The houses that we are raising our children in are the practice ground. They're the arena. They're the studio where all of the masters are being created. But they can't be created in the art gallery. You don't get an Olympian on the Olympic Hill. The Olympian is born on the backyard sledding track, messing up and rebuilding his course, then having his brother mess up his course and, you know, figuring it out with the sibling and then rebuilding the course over and over to become and to exemplify and to learn about Jesus, essentially, right? All right, now it's time for my story. Once upon a time, I went to public school, and I was in elementary school. I was like 10 years old, and I was coming home, and I was with my little brother, and my mom was on a vacation. She was singing with the Sweet Adeline's chorus, and I remember, and she was a baritone, and she'd always sing all of her songs in like this baritone, her like counter melody, and so I only know a lot of songs and only the baritone. Sometimes I'll start singing and my husband's like, that's not the actual tune. I'm like, it's the baritone harmony. I don't know why I know this. Okay, so she was out of town on a singing trip. Do we have more seats? We have one right here and one right here. Yeah, anytime, feel free. We are not defined by where the chairs are. The world is our classroom. Okay, so she was gone out of town. My dad was in charge. And you know what that means? yummy food, and good movies, usually Star Wars. And so we come home from school, and we take off our backpacks, and I open the door from the garage, and my dad is sitting there in his swimming suit, and this is unusual. I feel like I should say that this is not usually how my dad greets us. And he's sitting there on the floor. All of our furniture was out of our dining room, piled up against the fireplace. And my dad's an electrical engineer, so it was like a really cool structure. Like, he did a good job, like, packing it over. And all of the light caramel pergo flooring was mopped clean. And my littlest brother was in diapers, and he was sitting in his diaper next to my dad with a big, like, you know, like, food storage size gallon container that was closed. So it was like an aluminum can. And he said, "Hey, welcome home from school, Carly. Hey, James, go get your swimming suits on." And I was like, "All right. When dad is in his swimming suit, when I come from school, I just, like, do what he says. I'm not going to argue. I don't know." So I go get my swimming suit on, and my brother does too, and we come up, and my dad hands me a can opener. So we're all sitting around this little can like a campfire, and he hands me the can opener, and so I start to undo the tin can. And he's like, "What's inside?" And I lift the lid, and it's chocolate pudding. Chocolate pudding in a big can, a gallon of it. And he says, "Have at it, Carly. Have at it. Dump it out on the floor." And I was like, "Dump what? On the what floor? Does mom know about this? What are you doing?" And so my brothers just grabbed handfuls and started eating it. I'm just smearing it on each other. And they started experimenting with it. And I just kind of started drawing because I was like, I don't know, it's like kind of messy around here. And but then by the end, we were all sliding across the floors in our chocolate pudding. And we had seen whose bums were the highest on the walls by seeing our bums against the walls. We were pushing off and, you know, floating and laughing and singing. And eventually, it was time to clean up. And we had so much fun, and it was a great memory. My dad put towels all the way to the bathroom so we could tiptoe on our chocolate pudding floor and not get anything wet, because mom could not know, is what I learned, that this was like kind of a thing, that rogue thing he was doing. And so we showered off, and once we were clean, we got towels, and we just cleaned it up. And where there was chocolate pudding all over us, and all over the kitchen, and all over the walls, whoops, and now all over this conference room, there was cleanliness. And he paid us a quarter for every hidden drop of chocolate pudding we could find. So not only did we make bank, we had a really good time. And when my mom called that afternoon, my little brother said, "Mom, we spilled the chocolate milk today." And she said, "Oh, I'm sorry. Did you clean it up?" "Yeah, we cleaned it up." And she didn't know for 6 months. And now when she talks about it, she says, "Couldn't you just have used vanilla pudding? Come on. What's your problem?" My dad's purpose in doing this was because he was on his own journey. He was on his own journey of letting go of control. He was on his journey of teaching us that messes didn't define us, and that our houses were for us, that we were allowed to live in them, and that we were the most important thing. My dad had his own traumas, and he was nervous when things got out of control. That was unsafe to him. So deliberately, he created a situation that was out of control. And it was out of control, you guys. It was out of control. But what that taught me was that I was safe. That taught me that I could make messes, and I could learn, and I could fail. What that taught me was that my dad's got my back, and that there's nothing that he can't handle, because I can bring all my dirty stuff to him, and we just clean it up. And he'll pay me a quarter to figure out where I've left anything out. And just like me, and just like this conference room, hope potentially, we're all clean. We're all clean. And we're all the better for it, right? So I'm not going to invite you to dump chocolate pudding all over your floor. That's coming in July. So follow me on Instagram. What I'm inviting you to do is to see the mess, to see your people, and to give really important invitations about their life and about how they apply to the gospel through your stuff. Because to God, all things are spiritual. And now I have some stuff in my hair, spiritual stuff. This is how we anchor This is how we become better. This is how we rise up. Do I have stuff all over me still? Am I good? Okay, we actually cleaned it up. All right. So why? Why do we care about reprogramming this? Can't we just like a clean house? Can't we just be fine? Why do we want to retell our stories that are going on? Here's why. This is how we experience connection. It's so important that we are okay in all the chaos so that we can connect, so that we don't have to rely on our houses for safety. We want to rely on our Savior for safety. He's our safety. We have the power to connect to Him no matter what, in anywhere. So let's believe Him. I feel so connected to my dad because of this experience. He says, and I don't even remember this, that after we cleaned up the chocolate pudding, my friend called. Her name's Keely. Her phone number is 544-9409, and I can still remember it and dial it with my eyes closed. And she she called, and she was like, hey, Carly, can you play? And I was like, Dad, I have a little bit of homework, and I think I want to help the brothers do X, Y, and Z. I can't play. And he was like, okay. Hi, my dad says that I can't play, and I'm really sorry. It's the worst. But because I felt connected with him, I was able to self-assess. I could see where I needed, what I needed to do. I felt safe to say no to my friends. I wanted to be home with my parents. I wanted to be home with my brothers because we had a good time. So let's get into the research because, you know, tax dollars. I'm just kidding. BYU, I don't think takes many tax dollars. Maybe they do. We don't know. All right, so there's no place like home. The associations between residential attributes and family functioning. This is the official title of my peer-reviewed published research. This is so fun because this didn't exist. That's what I love about research. It's taking something that doesn't exist before and showing causation, not causational, correlational connections. So what we connected was, well, where we started was I went in with my interior design mind like, this is going to be fun. There's a paint color that makes everyone feel safe. We're going to have a layout that includes everyone for family home evening. And if you just put this thing on the chart, then everybody's going to love the scriptures. And if you have a dining table like this, then you'll all travel the world together. Like, I was, in my mind, it was all these implications, and I was ready to prove it. And if you were perfect, if you were organized, because cleanliness is next to godliness, then you would feel more godly. So let's go. Okay. And I was, if you had karate chop pillows, then that was the answer. And I'd watched enough HGTV to know that everyone's happier with karate chop pillows. So let's prove it. And we got into the research, and this is what I found. Lots of statistics, lots of p-values. We can talk about it later if you're into that stuff, because I love it too. But the culmination of the hundreds and thousands of hours we spent figuring out how stress and the home interact is this. Drumroll, please. Oh, yes, an actual drumroll. The only thing that matters is what thoughts you choose to think and what story you choose to tell. And this is how the research proved it. I studied how the house was, like the math of the house. You have so many people per square foot in your home. Da, 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 da. And then I studied family outcomes. We make great decisions together. We have positive affect. That means we like each other. We can be in the same room for an extended period of time. Blah, blah, blah. Family outcomes. And there were like correlations. And I was like, we're on the right track. Let's ask some more questions. And then we put in two mediating factors is what it's called. Two things that we thought might influence the results. One was if they thought the mom thought her house was crowded, if she had crowded feelings. One was if she felt like her people were too distant from her. She had distance feelings. And every result went away. So what this means is the house doesn't matter. And I was like, what? This was my million-dollar business of selling the curtains that rock. But what we found was what you think is what matters. Your perception matters. That was what the research said. And I was like, all right. So we published it and I graduated. And I was kind of like, now what do I do? Like, I guess what you think matters. So I wanted to help people. I wanted to help myself learn how to think so that we can have the outcomes we desire and stop relying on the false gods of houseness that actually fall out. So what stories are we choosing to tell? So when we do the math, this is just what I was explaining before. We had mom's stories in the middle and then the outcomes. The math fell away. We realized we were on the wrong end of the equation. We realized that our thoughts, it's all about your thoughts. It's all about your heart. We theorized that you change the outcomes by changing the home. We thought, do your dishes, be celestial. And what really we learned was that changing your beliefs, be celestial, influences your home. Do your dishes or not. Have a celestial home. I have this fascination with what I would feed Jesus if he came to my house for dinner. I think about this all the time. It's very probably strange. We should talk about it another time. But I also wonder, what would Jesus say if he came to my house? And if this were true, if this first one were true, then I would want this perfect house so that I could receive Jesus. But what I'm learning is more and more true based on when I talk to God and how I feel, and based on the research that I've done, and based on the hundreds of people that I've worked with create their homes, is that when you feel godly, when you are connected to God, you show up in ways that praise him. And he would come into my house and be like, yeah, girl, I see you're making conscious choices. I see you have kids. I see you have various objects on horizontal surfaces. Let's talk about how I love you. Right? It's just kind of a non-issue. Boyd K. Packer said, true doctrine, understood, changes attitudes and behavior. The study of the doctrines of the gospel will improve behavior quicker than a study of behavior will improve behavior. This is the same sort of thing we're talking about. When you know Jesus, you'll act like a better person, or you'll do the things, right? Same principle. The gospel changes everything. The gospel unlocks our power to choose. There was this battle. I don't know if you've heard about it. And there was one guy who was like, let's control everybody and everybody will make it back to heaven. And there's another guy that's like, let's let them choose and learn and fail and do like crazy stuff and like learn who they are and feel how they're connected to God. And we all chose this guy. The plan of control was Satan's plan. The plan of agency and choice, this is Jesus's plan. So when we're trying to control outcomes and when we're trying to hold on tighter and do the right thing for the right thing's sake, we're missing the point. When life comes at us hard, we always have the power to tell a story. And the story is how we choose to turn our hearts to God. The magic is in the power to see things differently. This is the power of true agency. So just like a mess, just like putting chocolate pudding on the floor could give us a heart attack when we think about it, and it was the most connecting experience of my childhood, I want our stories to change about the things that are stressing us out so we can experience the power of Christ. Chris Okahomi, he's the Christian pastor. He's a cool dude. Until you change a man's thinking, you cannot change his life. You cannot change his state, and therefore cannot change his estate. And he said estate, and so I feel like it's very pertinent to this. But the truth is the same. You think and you feel, then you behave, and then you experience the results. We can't change the order. So power, baby, let's stress into it. Let's lean into it. Let's not stress into it. Stress-free is a state of mind. So how can we cultivate this state of mind, and how can our houses help us remember? Because just as we're having this awesome experience today, together, when we go home, you're going to be inundated with the same invitations that are going to spark your biology in the same ways that they've always been sparked for the last 10 to 500 years, right? Depending on how your ancestors were and what genes you got and all of this, like, we are programmed. And this is awesome because we're programmed, we learn not to eat the things that are going to kill us. We learn not to step in front of the carriages and cars and planes. You know, we like are learning things from our programming. But sometimes we just get a little blip where it doesn't actually ring true, where it's not actually helpful programming. That's when we experience stress. It's a sign to us that we're out of alignment. So instead of stress being something we have to fix and mitigate and problem solve for, we're just going to see stress as the little indicator light. It's time to get a little bit more oil in the car. It's just time to realign. If we're stressed out, there's nothing wrong. It's just our body saying, we're going to die. And you can be like, it's chocolate pudding, baby. We just clean it up. We're totally going to be fine. We're going to reprogram. Let's remember. I developed a tool to help you create your centered, story-filled home. Now, some people call this character. When I'm talking to people on the phone who don't know me yet, and they're like, I just want a house full of character and personality. I'm like, you want a house full of messes and failure? That's what they really want. This is what we want. We want stories and we want real connection. We don't want to be in a box. We don't want to have to show everybody on Instagram how perfect we are because we're not perfect. We just want to see each other. We want to love each other. We want to eat together, feel together, cry together, sweep our floors together. That's what we want. So this is called relationship anchoring. And from the research and from all my experiences helping people design their houses, this is the way that we do it. It's in your book, on your guidebook, and we're going to go through it together right now. So step one, you're going to designate the space. I would like to say that these steps can be interchangeable in their order because we're going to start now from your house. We're going to say kind of like, what decision are we making? What's stressing us out? Where's our conditioning at? as we're showing up just as we are. But if you want to, you can start in the middle and kind of explore outward as well. Know that's your freedom. Okay. Step one, designate the space. What's the home decision that you need to be making? So in your mind, think of the place in your house that needs a little attention, that's stressing you out. The chore that you can't get your kid to do. The conflict that you're experiencing in a setting in your house regularly, the same one over and over. What is it? Let's hear a few examples. Say it again.
Food in the basement.
Food in the basement. Perfect.
Laundry room.
What about the laundry room?
And there's clothes all over it.
Okay. There are folds of clothing on horizontal surfaces in a particular geolocation. I'm just kidding. Okay, go ahead. What was this one?
It says
kitchen messes. Perfect. Yes.
No storage.
Yes, kids' rooms exploding. I think they actually do explode, don't you? I mean, there's no way. There's no way that happens. I know, it's like a cosmic intervention. I don't get it. What was this one back here? No one does dishes, so they have dishes. Awesome. How about this side? What was it? Can't find it. Yes. Oh, we all resonate with this. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Tell him just to dump it on the floor. It's fine. Awesome. So what is the home decision to be made? And get really mathy about it. This is where we're going to get mathy. We're going to be like, there are 20 things on my fridge shelf, and I can only see 6. There are things in the pantry. I have 5 shelves, and I have 500 things, and I only want 20. There are 500 million clothes. There's cosmic events happening. Whatever it is, get really mathy about it and try to describe it in a way that, like, a lawyer would be like, yes, that is a fact. Yes, that is a fact. Versus like, this is so chaotic and I hate everything in this pantry. Blah, blah, blah. Right? That is emotional. So we're just going to try to be mathy. Try to be mathy. Designate the space. And we're going to approach it from a place of curiosity that's like, oh, I think I'd like to do something about this. This is interesting. What a problem to solve. What a fun thing. What a fun mess that I can create with and clean up with. And now mess is no longer bad, no longer immoral. Mess is just a math. It's just like things on a floor. Designate the space you want to make a decision about. Now list the decisions. This is where a lot of us stop because we're like, it's too overwhelming. Too many decisions. I can't. Blah, blah, blah. Don't let your brain do that. Tell yourself the story that you are capable of solving all the decisions relating to your home. So, do you need new shelves? Do you need organizer units? You know what you need. You know what you need. Do you need to pare down on the shirts? Do you need to put up a screen that doesn't allow Saturn to enter the children's room every 3.5 hours? Whatever it is, like, what do you think would solve it? What are the decisions? You don't have to make the decisions. You just need to state the decisions. I have to choose new flooring. This is so fun with new houses because there's like 5,000 decisions, like trim, hardware, shingles, roof gutters. Who chooses roof gutters? Was that even a choice? Like things like this. List them all out. All the things that you think might be overwhelming, list them out. Are you listing them? List 2 things. Actually, list 1. 2 if you're just bored and you need extra credit. Okay. Step 3 is choose a core relationship to honor. I teach that there are 6 core relationships, and this is so fun and so important because this is where our stories germinate. We have our relationship with God. We have a relationship with ourselves. We have a relationship with our spouse, yeah? We have a relationship with our kids. We have a relationship with other people that come into our houses, including our friends and our mothers-in-law. And we have the earth, her beautiful self. When we choose a core relationship to anchor and to honor with, this is the heroine of the story. So let me give you an example. Let's take somebody's house problem. Yeah.
First
But you feel some dissonance. Okay, this is awesome. For those on the recording, her husband has more things than she would prefer in a disorganized way. Okay, so this is fun because default right now, you've chosen to honor your spouse, but you still feel uncomfortable, right? What's your name?
Elaine.
Elaine. Okay, so Elaine, you still feel uncomfortable. You're walking through your house and you still have to kind of self-coach. You're telling yourself stories. I love my husband more than the clutter. I love my husband more than my clutter. And that's awesome. That's a great choice. That's a choice. And so far, it hasn't worked yet, right? So we've got to elevate your story. You can keep telling yourself the story of your spouse if you want to, if you feel like that's the direction your soul is calling you. But we've got to put some fire behind it so you believe it. Because when we believe our stories about the people that we love, when we see the evidences of them in our lives, we feel love instead of feeling the shoulds. The silent shoulds of like, this is your house, this is a hoarder's house, this is so gross, you know, right? Like we tell ourselves other stories. So maybe you could switch up the relationship. Maybe you could choose to honor God, and every time you feel that discomfort and every time you see all the clutter, that's your husband's responsibility. We all know we can't make husbands do things, right? Husbands are going to husband. This is something that is a truth. And when we think we can control husbands, it doesn't lead to joy. But we can choose to honor God through our husband's choices. So when we see the clutter that we wouldn't choose, and I get you on this, we can say, Heavenly Father, I choose to honor you, and I'm showing up as thy disciple right now and thinking about all of the covenants that I have made, and I'm going to choose to feel love for God, because right now it's not accessible for the spouse, but I can choose God. And then you're like, clutter it up, baby. I'm just getting better at being like Jesus. I'm better at being like Jesus, and you really feel like it. You really feel like it. That's the difference, right? You guys have to try this to believe it, because it is funny, and these are the things that I tell myself, especially when I'm dysregulated, when I'm like, we're becoming like Jesus with this messy trailer. When we feel connected to Jesus, that's what he asks. What does God ask of us? A broken heart and a contrite spirit. Those are the rules. That's all he wants. He doesn't say a tidied house. He doesn't say controlling our husbands. He said a broken heart. And so if we can use our husband's stuff to help us have a broken heart, success. Like we have won the lottery. You could choose any of these relationships. Which one do you want to choose? Does that feel good to you? Because you can also choose yourself, and if you decide you don't like it, you go in and you clean up his stuff. But that's about you. Yeah, we've tried that, right? It doesn't work. It doesn't work in the long term because he doesn't care. You have a husband who doesn't care, and you have a wife who cares. The options are wife can care and do the thing, or you can ask the husband to care, but he's allowed to say no. It feels unsafe. That's totally okay. We call this an optimal stimulation set point. Oh, sure. Exactly, because we can't control. Doesn't work. But we all have this. We all have a point where we're like, that's too many dishes. I mean, 24 was not too many dishes, but 26 is like, too many dishes. Everybody do the dishes, right? We all have a point where there's an optimal stimulation where we've hit. And some people it's low, and some people it's high. And you can never control somebody else's meter, but you can control your own. So I recommend getting really clear about what you'd prefer and knowing what's your boundary to do and knowing what other relationships you could choose to honor through this experience. So you choose a core relationship and they're the heroine of your story. You don't choose to honor God with your husband's clutter and then harp on your husband, because that's not honoring any of your relationships, right? You got to stay in your lane of the relationship that you choose. If you're doing dishes, this is my choice. When I do the dishes, it's a me honor time. I do it at night, and I put in my podcast, and I do my dishes, and sometimes I watch a Hallmark movie, and I prop up my iPad, and I do my dishes, and it's like this time that I'm like, I love this. This is me time. This is not about teaching the kids responsibility. This is not about having an equal marriage. This is not about using sustainable dish laundry soap. What's it called? Dish soap. There it is. This is not about the earth. This is not about what are the people going to think when they come to my house. This is about me. This is about me. But other things are about my, like the people coming to my house. I have a really fun welcome mat that's like, howdy, y'all. Like, I love it. And that's about the people coming to my house. And I do that so they'll feel welcome. I don't do that for me. It's a relationship and I can stay in my lane. All right. Step four. How are we doing? Step four is select a story. How do you want to honor them? What are the thoughts you're going to think? What's the process you want to go through? How do you want to do it? What's the intricate details of how this is going to play out? Are you going to watch a Hallmark video? Are you going to listen to the podcast? Are you going to call your best friend? Are you going to FaceTime your mom? Like, how are you going to, what do you want to do if you're honoring yourself? What's the story? What's the memorable moment you're going to honor through the choice of your couch? What's the future self you're going to become by the carpeting you put in? What's the character value you're going to help your kids learn by the pillow you put on their bed? What's the heritage? What's the part of you that's been passed down? What's the pioneer grit? What's the sourdough making bowl that's been in your family for generations and you don't have it anymore, but you want to honor that spirit of like homey makingness? Like, how are you going to do that with the thing that you're choosing that you've already written down? Step five, decide your anchor object. Choose the thing, put it in your house. Get the stand for the iPad so you can watch the Hallmark channel. Choose the dish soap and write on it, I love myself more than anything in the world and I love Hallmark movies, and you put it right there to remind yourself. This is like the quintessential sticky note on the mirror, but we are elevating it. No sticky notes on mirrors. You're going to choose the mirror and the frame of the mirror that resonates to you who you want to become. Or you're going to choose the toothbrush that you know is your kid's favorite color because the toothbrushes now honor how you see your children. Right? Okay. It's a symbol. We're good with symbols, right? We are a symbolic people. Take your story. Implement it into your house with a symbol, a physical, tactile symbol. You can see, feel, taste, touch, anything. Anything sensory is great. So leave your stress at the door, and if you need to use the door to remind yourself that stress stops here, do it. From now on, your door, maybe it's your front door, maybe don't use your front door, maybe use your garage door. Maybe it's the door to your bedroom, maybe it's the door to your bathroom. Choose a door and have it be your stress door. And when you walk through that architectural defining element, you take a deep breath and you choose to reframe. Instead of stress, you're going to story. That's your commitment and that's your anchor. I want to challenge you guys to have a 100 story house. Some of my clients have done this through in some really fun ways. This does not mean that you have to go buy all new things. This doesn't mean that you have to make your husband buy in. This is something that you can secretly do in your own heart, in your own journal. This is something you can share with a bestie or a co-op. This is something that you can do in any way that feels resonant to you. But if you have 100 little anchors in your house of all the relationships that are most important to you, all of a sudden, instead of hearing shame when you walk into your house, you should be doing this. All the people are against you. He doesn't care about you or love you. You're forgotten by God. Your stuff is going to start speaking to you like, remember the morning of the resurrection. Your children are a gift from God. Your spouse, you chose him, and you are a good decision maker. You're like anything that you want to, any story you want to tell about your people, to have 100 of them will really elevate the way you're thinking because it will remind you. When you get caught in the conditioning that's familiar, the stuff outside of us can help us remember what we've covenanted, who we care about, the way we want to show up, and we will become. One of my clients, two weeks ago, she had a tragedy happen in her family. Something sad happened in her house. And she left and she was like, how am I ever going to go home again? How am I going to be in the same walls where I feel so betrayed? How am I going to be in the same walls and not relive this traumatic event over and over and over? And she told me she walked into her house and she saw her welcome entry table that she had dedicated to Christ and his atonement. She saw the books that represented to her how she can learn of him and study of him. She saw the red color of the entry table that reminded her of his blood and the mirror of how she's a reflection of him. She just got her new floors in, and she remembered how she is a firm and strong woman who can make decisions on her own and implement change in the world. She saw her couch she dedicated to the relationship with her husband, where she and her husband found the perfect couch that met both of their needs in ways that they loved. They went on this big date to purchase it. It's been 6 months in the coming, a few sendbacks, how she's committed to this couch and she's committed to her husband, and this is the representation of it. She looked at her curtains that were inspired by Disneyland, one of the happiest places in her life, and how her house was speaking peace to her. Her house was speaking relationship to her. Her house was speaking comfort and love to her in this same place where sadness had happened. She was like, thank you for helping me make these choices. I did nothing. I did nothing. I just chatted with her. And so she's saying thank you to herself. I'm so glad that I made these choices so that they completely tipped the scales and outweighed everything I was stressed about with my house to feel loved. My house supported me and rallied around me. All the stories were embedded in all of the things so that I could be who I want to be even when tragedy hit. One of my clients chose to create a Serenity Now ensuite lounge in their master bedroom because he's overstimulated sometimes by the kids and the chaos. So in their master bedroom, they have a little like nursery nook or an office nook that he has created his Serenity Now lounge, and he has like Zen things and like massagers, and it's his place to remember himself and to get lined up so he can be the best for his people. I've called my ranch the Delphos. And even the name of my ranch is an honor to my grandpa, who grew up in his own ranch in Texas. And he always talked about how we went down to the Delphos, and I raced you to the Delphos, and the last one in the Delphos has to give me a foot rub and all these different things. So we've named our ranch after him. It's an honoring of him. The 100-story house, who's in? Who's going to do it? Awesome. I'd love to hear about it. Your stories are waiting to be told, my friends. They're waiting to be told. You're already telling stories. You might as well make them intentional ones, right? Ones that you like, ones that feel good. Within the next 24 hours, I want you to go through this relationship anchoring process, and I want you to create one intentional anchor in your house with an actual thing. Yes, do you commit? Okay, awesome. Get one thing in your house. You don't even have to get a new thing. Just look at the table you already have and anchor it. Yes. Totally, totally. So anchoring is just that 5-step process we went through of like choose a relationship, figure out a symbol of the story you want to be front of mind, and then figure out a way that it relates to the thing in front of you. So let's do it to this table. We have 30 seconds. It's going to be epic. What's the relationship we're going to anchor this table to? To your kids. Okay. And so you are skipping the first 2 steps because you aren't making a decision. You're not stressed about it, but you're wanting to anchor. So you choose the relationship. Kids, what's the story about your kids? My kids love to draw. From now on and forevermore, then you just declare it. From now on and forevermore, this table is dedicated to my children who love to draw. Every other purpose of this table is secondary. And every time I see this table, it will remind me of my children and how much I love them and how I am here to help them draw. That means that I'm going to draw on this table to show them that this is a drawing table. Every time they draw on this table, whether it's on paper or off the paper, on the table, this is the drawing table. We draw here. This is where we develop our talents. This is where we make misses. This is how we're doing it in our house. This table may be a lifetime, you know, Costco situation that is now consecrated to my family and to my highest self. Does that kind of make sense? Yeah. So you can do that with anything in your house. All right, you guys, David Foster Wallace, this is my favorite talk in the world. I listen to it on repeat. This is a quote from it. You can look it up online. Look for the two goldfish, and he says a swear word in the first 10 seconds, so just watch out for it. It's like a what the heck moment, you know? Okay, so I'm going to reframe one of his quotes to be about the house. He's talking about education, which is pertinent here, but the real value of a real home has almost nothing to do with performance and everything to do with simple awareness of what is so real and essential. So hidden in plain sight all around us all the time that we have to keep reminding ourselves over and over, this is water, this is water. Because just like the goldfish who don't even know what water is, even though it's their life-giving sustenance of their surroundings, we have life-giving sustenance of our surroundings that can give life, breathe life, support life, just like the water does to the fish. Thanks, you guys.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.